all about the pendants, baby.
Hello, IT. Have you tried turning it off and on again?
To start, press any key. Where's the any key?
Excuse me. I believe you have my stapler.
Welcome to We Are Technologies User Friendly with host Bill Sickens, technology architect.
Welcome to User Friendly. Welcome back. We've got a great show for you this week. Check us out online, userfriendlyshow.com. New website. We've got our podcast posted. We even have our season one podcast from 3 years ago. One User Friendly on Twitter, one User Friendly on Facebook. So this week on our show, we've got a number of different things that we're going to be talking about. The new update for the Android operating system has come out, Nougat. Is it good? Is it bad? Is it worth doing? We're going to get into some detail on that in a little bit. 3D printers have been out on the market for a while. In fact, last week we were reviewing one at the Silicon Valley Comic Con. But what about 3D scanners? That's actually another new and upcoming technology, and we're going to go into a lot of detail on that. Preston will be joining us again this week to talk about what he does. What does he do? We'll find out. He's actually a game programmer and a very good one, and is lucky enough to get advanced access to a lot of different things. So it's interesting to see what he has out there. Auto drive is a new feature that we're seeing on cars now, and we're going to talk a little bit about that and how that's affecting things and when you can actually plan to see it in your next new car. Gary Wolcott, Mr. Movie of the Pacific Northwest, will be on to review the movie La La Land. We'll see if he likes it or not. Now, Gary, if you remember, he hasn't been on the season yet. This is going to be his first time as our hater of technology. At least that's what he calls himself. So we're going to be looking at that a little bit in the future and see where that ends up going. I know that he makes do with different things, but he's comes up with some issues that I've never heard of before. So it's very interesting to look at that. But today we're going to have him on reviewing the movie, which is something that he does very, very well and has for many years. So see if we want to all go see La La Land. And then finally, we have a segment on home automation. So all of these different devices that are out there, smart things, Ivy, the Lowe's system, what's good, what's bad, how does it work, do you need it? So that's our show today. Gretchen, welcome to the show.
Hello.
Is there anything else I'm forgetting?
Yeah, next week or this week is May the 4th. You know, May the 4th be with you.
Oh, okay. I'm thinking May the 4th. So what is May the 4th?
Hey, Jeremy, you're the one who...
May the 4th is a play on May the 4th be with you. It's a Star Wars fan holiday. So what people will do is gather in groups, watch the movies, play the card games, play the board games, and we'll do something that has to do with Star Wars.
Well, that sounds absolutely incredible. So you're talking about playing board games and stuff. Are there actually special events in places?
There are. In fact, the one I read about recently was New York Philharmonic will be having a concert.
The New York Philharmonic. Well, I guess considering John Williams and his art as a composer, it would make sense that you'd have a Philharmonic orchestra performing. That must be something that's awfully fun to go to.
One would think.
So in other things, a little bit less formal events, do people do like a movie marathon or anything of that nature?
Absolutely.
So could you actually sit down and watch all of the Star Wars movies, Rebels, Clone Wars, and the whole gambit in one day? Or does it actually exceed 24 hours now?
Oh, it's going to be more than 24 hours because the Clone Wars series is six seasons of 22 episodes. Well, the sixth season is only like 12 episodes, but I mean, you're talking days of watching it over and over, you know. And then Rebels is three seasons now, and that's 20-something episodes apiece, too. So you're talking days and days now. 3 days, probably, of just Star Wars.
Well, that is absolutely amazing where it's gone. And, you know, all the movies, I know there's a lot of agreement and conversation and disagreement about this, but in my opinion, all the movies are pretty good. I don't think there really is a bad one. But some I like better than others, and I think everybody else feels that way too. So maybe it's worthwhile sitting down and figuring out what parts of it you want to watch to be able to fit it in. I know it takes me a day just to figure out what order I'm supposed to watch the Clone Wars in, so, but that's me.
Hey, and there's something else. Don't forget all of our Sith fans. There is Revenge of the Fifth, and that's when all of the fans go dark side.
So you have the light side on the 4th and the dark side on the 5th.
Yep.
So do you have cookies on the 5th?
I hope so.
I have cookies on both days.
Because I've heard the dark side has cookies.
But do they have milk?
Yeah, see, maybe they don't have the milk, and then you choke on it.
Well, we can find out this week. So I'll need to ask anybody if you're drinking cookies or eating cookies and drinking milk on Revenge of the Fifth, get on our website and let us know, userfriendlyshow.com. One User Friendly on Twitter, one User Friendly on Facebook. We'll be back after the break. Welcome back to User Friendly. One User Friendly on Facebook, one User Friendly on Twitter, userfriendlyshow.com. Check us out online. Jump in there, be part of the show. Check us out.
Hey, I hear Android's being updated again. Can you tell me a little bit about that?
Android is actually being updated to version 7, which is called Nougat. And every version being named after a piece of candy or something sweet. It follows that they would do this. I don't think there was a lot of things that started with the letter N, so Nougat works. We're actually going to see a lot of new features. So the Android operating system, just to give a little bit of background on that, and as somebody that's been writing Android apps basically since it came out, the original version of Android was actually meant to be an operating system for digital cameras.
Oh, really? I didn't know that.
Yep, not something that was geared towards the smartphone at all. It was going to be used for SLR and other high-end cameras and be an operating system that allowed for certain things to go on with that. And then the first public release, which came out on a device called the HTC, which was the very first smartphone that actually ran Android that you could buy, which was, I think, version 1.4 or something in that thing. It was right before they actually started naming them beyond the numbers. Made them look at it and go, you know, this is something that can do a lot more than just a digital camera. And the other thing is, the smartphones have digital cameras, so that component of it is going to become obsolete as a separate item. Now, I know a lot of us still use separate digital cameras out there, but everybody has a camera in their phone. And, you know, as we've seen actually in current news and stuff, it allows you to catch pretty much anything that's going on out there. So why would you limit it to just that one thing when it can do a lot more?
So what are the new features with this upgrade?
Version 7 is coming out with several different things. One of them is what I would call more of a flat than a 3D design. This is something that's following along with the Apple smartphones that they did about a year ago. So just, again, design is like style and fashion, and we go through different editions of that and different things. It's being called Android's sweetest release. One of the things that the developers look at it from a standpoint, it's the first version where we would actually consider the operating system mature. And what I mean by that is a lot of the bugs have been worked out and a lot of the details have been solved. There's a new instant or auto message feature, not auto, but where you can respond very quickly to a message with one touch, and different things like that that you've seen in other operating systems that we're now starting to see in this. One of the other big updates that it's got is the taskbar. You just thumb down from the top of the screen and you can get to all of your phone setting options on one line instead of having to go through multiple menus. It still does have the double feature where if you want to pull it all the way down to get the names of things, but it's a much quicker way of being able to get in there and adjust your settings.
So are there any disadvantages?
Well, like with any new operating system, there's always the possibility of bugs. And one of the things, Gretchen, I know that you and I actually had an experience on when we installed ours yesterday, is that the update, we have Verizon Samsung Galaxy S6 phones. So they're about 2 years old now. And I know you had some weird, what were some of the weird things you saw in it?
My Verizon Messenger, I have a spell check feature. And when I clicked on the misspelled word to get the correct spelled word, it turned a black drop-down menu that I couldn't see anything.
Okay, so that's a little bit irritating.
Intense.
Yeah. So now, spell check is a feature that used to exist in text messaging before. So they've just, in some way, it's not working right.
Well, it just has that weird drop-down menu now that was completely blacked out. And I tried it like on Twitter. Twitter was fine. But it was specifically my Messenger system that I think goes with the Verizon setup.
So I also hear that some of the in-app notifications, alarms and things have stopped working.
Yeah, that's right. I'm not getting all of my Twitter notifications, and I don't think it's Twitter because I checked on my laptop, and they're working fine there.
And the calendar system is not working either. I can't get any notifications about appointments or anything.
So those are some of the talk about disadvantages. These sound like some, you know, maybe bugs that they need to get worked out. Now, the interesting thing is I also installed the update last night on my tablet, and the notifications are working there. I don't have text messaging from the tablet, so I couldn't test that.
So maybe it's unique to my device?
It could be unique to the device specifically, and it could be something that you don't see across the board. So we'll have to see what the feedback is to see who's having trouble with that. So if you're having trouble with the update, or if you like the update and like a few new features, jump on our website and let us know so we can talk about it on down the road.
So how does one get an upgrade if it hasn't been already pushed on?
That is an interesting question. And this is something that's actually come up every time we've seen an upgrade on Android, because it's a little bit unusual the way that this is handled. On a regular desktop computer like Windows or your Mac OS X or those type of systems, when an update comes out, you basically either buy or download the update and install it. So it's up to you to do it. I know with Windows 10 last year, they were pushing it a lot, but it was still up to you to do it. And you can either choose to update or not update. Now, Android is a little bit different because the distribution model, the way that it works, is Google puts out the update to the operating system, is just a generic update for the overall features and the different things that are going to be seen in it. But that doesn't necessarily mean you can install it yet. It also doesn't mean it works on every device. And what generally happens is, let's take as for example the Samsung Galaxy phones. It's been a year to pick on them, so why not now? Mm-hmm. And look at the way that that works. So there's two levels of customization that actually happen before you see the update. Number one, it goes to Samsung, and they make sure that it works with their devices. And then the second thing that happens is it goes to your provider, so in our case, Verizon, whatever your phone provider might be, and they customize it.
So it's a two-stage step process before it reaches us.
That's basically correct, yeah. And what happens is that when it actually gets to you, that might not be right after Google releases the update. You might have to wait a few weeks. Now, the positive side to that is usually, now we're seeing a little bit of a difference here in our case, but usually that means that it's a lot more tested than a generic update that you would have for something like Windows. So a lot less problems. Not always. With any type of computer update or operating systems or software, there's always the potential that something's not going to work right. But I do think it's gotten a lot more rock solid on the Android environment over the years because they do this type of testing. Now, one footnote on that, if you did want to manually upgrade your device, in some cases it is possible to simply go out to the distribution network and download the update. But a lot of cell phone providers, especially if your phone's locked and that type of thing, will prevent you from having access to what's called the ROM, which is what you have to update to be able to actually update the operating system inside of it. So there's a lot of places you can go online. One of the things you do have to be very careful about is if your provider has locked that out and wants you to use their update, you can end up inadvertently in a process called bricking your phone, which is basically it installs the software and locks it up.
That would be really bad.
The other thing is to make sure that your manufacturer is actually even doing an update, because not all devices, of course, will run the latest and greatest versions. And like any other computer, some older ones may not be capable, and therefore it's not available. So a lot of that plays into it. The best thing to do is check with either your cell phone provider, if it's a mobile device that's on a cell phone network, or the manufacturer usually has a way to do that. I do have to say one thing. Last night, after we did our updates and on Twitter, we were talking a little bit about some of the problems we were having. Verizon got back with me, I would say, within 5 minutes of that going on. And I was actually able to talk to them at 9 o'clock at night and get a lot of this resolved and find out that they are looking at doing a resolution on the rest.
And you said this happened via Twitter?
Yeah, this happened via Twitter. We were just talking about it, and Verizon's name got listed in the thread. And they were obviously monitoring their social media. So I just say that as a shout out. I consider that to be good customer service.
You know, I've noticed that communicating through Twitter has had some really good results with some of these companies. So if you're having troubles, try the Twitter route.
Yeah, and the best thing is to be kind, but be able to post a little bit about what you're having. And usually what they'll come back with is follow us and then get us on direct messenger. And then they actually do talk to you and seem to follow up pretty quickly. Varies from company to company.
Social media is a big thing these days.
Social media is a very big thing these days. In fact, we're on social media. Check us out. One User Friendly on Facebook, One User Friendly on Twitter, and we'll respond too if you post something. Or if you want to do it old school, it's funny to think of this as old school, userfriendlyshow.com. We will be back after the break.
Oh, hey. Hey, I've got something I've been wanting to ask you about.
Go for it.
Well, remember it was about a year or two ago that we were at a Comic-Con, and I really wanted to get a 3D scan of myself and my costume.
Why, yes, I do.
And all the trauma that we went through, and it didn't turn out, the scan didn't work out, and then we were going to try and meet up with the company that did it. And they're still apparently doing 3D scans, and I was wondering, what else is this good for?
Well, back, let's talk about some computer history here a little bit.
Okay.
Early on, they came out with a device called a printer. And the other side of this was a scanner. You had to be able to get information in the computer as well as out. Now, printers, of course, you have word processing and other things that use them, but the scanning was a key component. And I think where this is coming into its own now is because we have 3D printers. And in order to use a 3D printer, you have to be able to input data.
That makes sense.
And one of the ways to do that is a 3D scanner. Now, you know, I say that a little sarcastically. Do I remember it? Yes, I actually remember it quite well, because that whole setup was very much, let's just say, a prototype. And a prototype is fine, but the way that they had it put together, I think, has evolved in the last 2 years quite a bit.
Okay.
And where you would see it today is going to be interesting, because when we go to the San Diego Comic-Con, I understand that they're going to have this type of a setup again, but they're doing it with state-of-the-art equipment.
Oh, really?
So it's going to be interesting to try again, and you'll have to see if you can get your scan there.
Oh, that would be kind of fun.
Now, for anybody that's not familiar with this type of technology, it's actually really cool. In concept, at least, you stand on this platform. The platform turns, and you have a couple of cameras because it's three-dimensional.
And you're supposed to stand really still.
You're supposed to stand still. It takes a couple of minutes to run. But what you end up with is being able to print, essentially, in this case, an action figure of yourself in your cosplay. And obviously, that's something that would be really kind of fun to be able to do. The only problem is, it's like with any new technology, it does have its limitations. And I think the company that put it on also did their best, but I think they had some budget limitations too with the way that they had set it up, which unfortunately we all face. It's just a matter of life.
Yeah, you were really limited as to, like, I had a lightsaber and the lightsaber was too thin. And then you also were limited how you could pose.
Yeah.
You were very limited space that you could. You couldn't crouch down and stick your arms out or anything like that. You had to kind of stand up straight.
Yeah, well, you're certainly limited to the area that it would be able to pick up, and the image sensor cameras are set up for. Now, it's interesting because there's quite a few ways to do this. They actually do have formal commercial 3D scanners, which may not be used for the purpose that you're talking about, but are used for entering information into the computer to be able to replicate items. One of the things that I know at a panel at another Comic-Con we were at, they were talking about this technology, and the person presenting the Comic-Con called it a modern version of a replicator, like you would have on Star Trek.
Oh, that's kind of cool.
And it's able to scan and reproduce. Now, it's not quite an exact copy. The guts don't get reproduced, but we are heading in that direction. One way that they do this a lot is with the cameras that go on like a PlayStation 4 or an Xbox. And the reason that they're able to use that is those camera setups are actually multiple cameras for the system to be able to work. But especially the device that goes on the Xbox, you can plug into a regular PC and it will operate. So you can use that to make 3D scans.
Really?
Now, the one thing of it is unless you set up a platform and some kind of an architecture to be able to hold the camera, I don't know how many of our listeners remember this, but when paper scanning first came out, you had these handheld scanners that you would drag along the paper. And unless you got very good at constant speed and stuff, it would not come out quite right. And we're seeing the same thing now. But again, it's just new technology, and I think it will continue to become more and more perfected. And I'm looking forward to seeing the one at the San Diego Comic-Con, because it's going to be interesting to see how far they've come with that and if we can actually do that. But the idea of being able to stand in there and get a 3D model of yourself in your costume is really kind of cool.
Yeah, it is really cool. And just the whole idea, I mean, we live in a day and age where we have photos, you know, digital images, you know, hundreds, perhaps thousands of digital images that are stored away on our computers. And now we have easy access to film and video. And now we're having access to like a three-dimensional record of ourselves. Can you imagine how much that has changed from what our, you know, like our grandparents had?
Oh, yeah. And it's actually much more recent than that. Remember, next year is the 10th year anniversary of smartphones.
Right.
When you think about that, that's not really that long.
But I mean, think about it. If our grandparents had had access, you know, how much more we would know about what their life was like?
Oh, yeah. Well, this is certainly one of the most well-documented, if not the most documented time in history, human history. And it's because of these type of things. And, you know, speaking of smartphones, they're actually coming up with some prototypes that have 3D cameras in them.
Oh, you're kidding.
So you're heading in the direction of being able to reproduce things like a 3D image or holograms or, you know, whatever the case may be. The Samsung phones, since their S6, have had multi-layer screens.
Yes, I've noticed that.
Which is kind of unique and cool. And that's becoming more of a standard feature now for VR and some of these other technologies. But again, the whole concept of 3D and 3D imaging and the ability to acquire data at more than one dimension for a variety of purposes is becoming more and more necessary. And I think you'll see your booth at the Comic-Con really has improved in 2 years.
Well, then I'm going to be looking for it.
Oh, yeah. I think we all definitely will. And we'll have to let everybody know how that goes. So if we get our action figures of ourselves, then we will be able to enjoy that.
Yeah, and what we should do is make sure that one is a film podcast.
Yes. We'll be right back.
La La Land was released on DVD this week and deserves some attention. Now, those that didn't see it in theaters will now have a chance to see what the fuss is all about and why the film won so many awards. The plot has Ryan Gosling and Emma Stone as star-crossed lovers. She's a wannabe actress looking for that one big break. He plays jazz piano and wants his own club. La La Land immediately got raves from movie critics and moviegoers, and when the awards buzz began, it saw writer-director Damien Chazelle winning a bunch of director nods. Gosling and Stone picked up Golden Globes, and Stone took home the Oscar. Songwriters Justin Hurwitz, Benj Pasek, and Justin Paul grabbed music awards from all manner of movie groups and associations, as did Linus Sandgren for his cinematography. And as you move into set design and costumes, the awards continued to pile up. No, it didn't win an Oscar for Best Picture and got burned by moonlight in that embarrassing melee at the end of the telecast. To Oscar experts and movie critics, including this one, it was a big surprise because the Best Picture Oscar is about the only award La La Land failed to get. And by the way, Moonlight wasn't last year's Best Picture, but truthfully, neither was La La Land. That statement leads to this question. Is La La Land really all that good? The answer is yes and no. As with Chazelle's directorial debut and the highly acclaimed Whiplash, when it comes to making interesting movies about music, the guy is just flat good and he's willing to take risks that most movie musical makers won't. La La Land starts with a mind-boggling song and dance number performed on a freeway exit. It's long and complex and features 30 dancers, 100 extras, and 60 cars. In an unheard-of coup that's nothing short of miraculous, he got an exit ramp on two interstate freeways in Los Angeles shut down for 2 days. Turns out to be La La Land's best and most impressive scene. This is the third pairing of Gosling and Stone. They sizzle in this one and obviously like each other, and they like collaborating. Gosling and Stone probably aren't their generation's Katharine Hepburn and Spencer Tracy, or in this case, Fred Astaire and Ginger Rogers, but they did steal a show in the non-musical Crazy Stupid Love and worked together in Gangster Squad a couple of years ago. It adds an extra spark to a movie that sparkles all over the place. La La Land does have a few warts at the 90-minute mark. It starts to wear on you, and by that point, I've had enough of music and dance, and I'm impatient for a wrap-up. The once engaging and endearing music and dancing has grown into a grind, but Chazelle is in a zone and packs the movie with another soggy 38 minutes of music and dance. The film ends up at a cringeworthy 2 hours and 8 minutes. It's a minor complaint. La La Land truly is a wonderful movie achievement, and after you see it on the smaller screen in your living room or wherever you watch these things, you're going to wish you'd seen it in a theater.
Hey, I hear that you are into home automation.
Is there anybody that doesn't have that?
Oh, yeah.
How would you turn on your lights?
You go to the wall and you flip the switch.
Thank you for that. You know, it was actually, there was a comment made along these lines that I went over to your house and, you know, the people are sitting in the dark for like 20 minutes until the person comes home. And we went over to your house and we asked the computer to turn on the lights and nothing happened. And so we didn't know what to do. And it does seem like in some ways that is the direction that we're headed in. Home automation has been a hot topic for the last couple of years. And at the Consumer Electronics Show this year, it was one of the biggest things being displayed. A lot of big names are playing in the arena. Apple has a system. Amazon has a system out there. Smart Home by Samsung. Lowe's, which is another topic for maybe the R-rated version of the show. But there are some different options out there, and I'll explain what I mean by that in a minute. Some good and some bad. And really, to put together a system like this, you are looking at a fairly substantial investment. The more you spend, the more it's capable of doing. But in a nutshell description, you basically have a small computer, which is called a hub. The hub is the center point of your home, and you connect what are called power relay devices that are able to control anything from your lighting to your water systems, your sprinklers. They do alarm systems normally. That's another big part of them. And as an example of that, it's actually kind of a lot of fun to put this together just to kind of see the different things that it's capable of doing. Now, I think the big place that this is going to find its niche is going to be with people like seniors and others that may not be mobile, that may be mobily challenged some way, have the ability from a remote control or in the next step as it is now through audio control, voice control, to be able to do things and have a better quality of life when they might not be able to do it through the means of somebody that doesn't have the handicap.
Exactly. Yeah.
Safety is another big thing with this. And they're actually starting to come out with some medical monitoring devices so that if somebody was to start to, say, have a health issue like a stroke, and you're wearing the sensor, the system can detect it and get you help. And things like a stroke saving 30 seconds can actually save the person's life or their quality of life. And that difference can be a big deal.
So this completely changes that whole situation where the woman falls down and says, "Help, I can't get up." Now it's there's something more to your home.
The devices have been out for a while. Apple Watch and the smartwatches have the sensors in them. So do a lot of smartphones to be able to do health monitoring. And it's a step of that that they're taking to be able to monitor these type of things where it can actually detect if someone has a fall.
Besides health stuff, what about like fire?
Well, you have all of your basic security. And fire, burglary, all of that type of stuff. There's a number of companies out there that make sensors for things like carbon monoxide and smoke alarms and all the rest of that that can tie into these central systems. So basically what you're doing in a lot of ways is taking technology that's been out there for a long time. I mean, we all have smoke detectors in our homes and offices and have for many years. And what they're doing is taking that and upgrading it so that it can connect to the central control unit and be able to report. So now if you have a fire or a carbon monoxide problem, not only does it set off the alarm, but it's able to act as a monitored system to be able to contact the authorities or have you self-monitor on your smartphone or other device.
So, like, if you had, like, a relative that just needed a little extra watching over, but you don't live with them, you could actually set up a smart home system and have it, like, send you information?
Yeah, there's been a lot of things like that where people, seniors especially, have been able to remain in their homes, whereas otherwise they might not have been able to for medical reasons. So you have a lot of applications there. Another area that it's used in is for people that have rental properties or multi-room condo associations, those type of things, apartment buildings, because you can monitor in addition to just your basic stuff, things like flooding. So if the water pipe breaks on the third floor, the system's able to tell you about it before you flood out the entire building. And with some of the newer technologies out there, actually turn the water off.
Wow.
So that can save a lot of expense and a lot of damage and just a lot of heartache, you know, from there. But the way that I've seen the systems most commonly used, I think the biggest one is that of the alarm system. Samsung SmartThings, SimpliSafe, Allo's Iris, these systems all have that capability. And basically what it is it sets up just like any other alarm system that you would have had, except that it's all wireless for one thing. You don't have to run cables. You don't have to drill holes and do all of that type of thing, which makes the installation a lot simpler. You can add on devices. Of course, you do have an issue with batteries, so you do have to monitor that type of thing and do some a little bit more of a maintenance cycle. Most of them will tell you if the battery's dead, but I had an interesting experience with that. I have a Samsung SmartThings on my home, and you don't think about batteries. There's other things in life. And I went out the front door and realized I hadn't turned the alarm off one day. And I'm thinking, okay, I didn't trip it. What's going on? Well, the battery and the sensor was dead. And then I went through and checked the thing and found out that it was time to change them all.
Uh-oh. Hey, here's a question. Now, do you have to stick with the same brand or are they interchangeable?
Yeah, it's nice that spring's coming, isn't it? That is a loaded question. Now, open source, and that's something we've talked about, is a big deal. And these systems vary a little bit. So to get into a little bit more of a technical end on this for those that are interested, the systems work with a protocol called Z-Wave. And there's some other things, but that's the primary thing. So it's like if you buy an internet router, it has all the letters, the same thing here. And if you buy a system like the Samsung that costs a little more than some of the others, all of the devices for it are open source. So if you buy something that, as long as it meets the Z-Wave protocol, it will work with the system.
So they get along.
They get along.
Okay.
And this is one of my issues with the Lowe's system. I was talking about that earlier in the year. I started out.
You hinted at that.
Yeah. I had a Lowe's Iris version 1. And this was about a year and a half ago now that all this happened. But out of the blue, we get an email. Well, we're upgrading to version 2, and here's a free new hub. And by the way, after July 31st, version 1 will be completely disabled. So I think, number one, I didn't like the fact that they could reach into my home and turn off my stuff.
Yeah, that seems kind of rude and invasive.
You know,
but that brings up the, I'm sorry, Bill, I can't do that.
Yeah, and that's exactly, I felt like I should have changed my name to Dave in those days.
It's, exactly.
You know, and that was the whole thing with it was that. But the other part of it was, is the version 2.0 didn't work when it was released.
Oh, you're kidding.
It didn't have many of the features that were in version 1. And a lot of my power relays and other control units that go with it, the modules that did work on version 1, wouldn't work with version 2.
That seems really odd and kind of expensive.
Yeah, I mean, these devices run $30 up each. And when you think about it, you're starting to have to just replace it for no reason. Other than they've decided to upgrade their technology. And I used to explain this with, anything computerized has newer versions, but you expect the newer version to be at least be equal to the previous one.
Yeah, equal or better.
Or better, yeah. Better is the preference, but at least equal to. But it would be kind of like if you have your smartphone and you have your Apple iPhone and the new version, and this didn't actually happen, so Apple don't call me, but just as an example, let's say the iPhone version 10 comes out. And Apple sends it to you, but it does it in a standpoint that you can't use your old one, which has never happened with smartphones. You can always use your old one if you want, but they send you a new one and it has a black and white screen, but that's an upgrade. And that's exactly what Lowe's did. And it was a situation, and the feedback was just so against all of this, because of course we weren't the only people having this problem, that they finally changed the model number of the hub just to get a new device to reset the feedback on their website. And it's the exact same device. It just has an A after the model number, but it's considered a new thing. So they were able to do that. My understanding is a year and a half has gone by. It has gotten better and they fixed some of the problems, but it's still, you know, one of those type of things. The Samsung system is also on its second version, but it worked with everything from the first version. You didn't have a problem like that.
It seems like, you know, you got to really take in your customers' longevity, you know, these people who stick with you, and then you throw something weird at them just because it'll make you more money. That's not such a good idea.
Yeah. That's the other thing is the whole money issue too. You have a vast difference in that too. The Samsung, can you figure out that I prefer the SmartThings, Samsung SmartThings? Yeah. But that system, in its base thing, you buy it and you buy your components and it's free to use. Low charge is a $10 a month fee for the, what they call advanced features, which seem to be including that of setting timers to turn on the lights, which seems like that would be a basic function. Some of the other ones out there, like SimpliSafe, also requires a subscription. So it's what you're looking at. Mm-hmm. Now, on the Samsung system, if you have your alarm monitored by a professional company, as I do, then you do pay for that. But that seems to be, it's a choice, not something you have to do.
Yeah. The freedom to be flexible is nice.
Yeah, and that's what I like. And again, it was more of an investment up front to get it, but it works with a much wider array of components. And the other thing for tech heads like me is you actually can program your own modules for it. So I've gone in, one of the things, it didn't by default have a keypad for the alarm. It was just anticipated that you would use your smartphone to turn the alarm on and off. And that's fine, but I wanted a keypad. So I was able to get a keypad that actually went to a Comcast system, but met the Z-Wave protocol, and then I wrote my own software to make it work. Wow. So you can do that, and it's kind of fun if you don't have to get into it that far. But there are those of us that, you know, are a little mentally ill with technology.
Talk about hacking your home.
Yeah. Now, Jeremy, you know, you bring that up too, and this is another side of this. We were talking about the Z-Wave protocol. The other main protocol that's used with home automation is Zigbee. So you have all these, I don't know what's with the Z's on that. But they actually were having a problem with that with some of the earlier versions where you could come in with a Raspberry Pi, put a Z-Wave transmitter on it, and jam the signal and bypass the alarm system. So these are all...
That's absurd.
Well, it's, you know, new technology and limitations to it, but Z-Wave was completely open. And on the first versions of it, there was no way to actually do that. You could add a device if you wanted to or got in at the right timing and really be able to screw up somebody's system. So anyway, home automation, check it out. It's a lot of fun to play with. Pretty easy to put a basic system together, and they can do a lot. We'll be back after the break.
Welcome back to User Friendly. We are here at the Snafu Con, and joining me today is Preston McCauley. Did I say that right?
Yeah.
Welcome to the show.
Well, thank you. Glad to be here.
Preston is a programmer, a fellow programmer that's worked on a number of projects. So I think let's start there. To tell us a little bit about some of the stuff you've done that might be kind of cool and what you like.
So I actually got my start on my programming career at 3G Studios here in Reno. So they do gambling games, slot machines, as well as actual video games. So I got to work on some of those. I got to work on an educational math game for them called My Dear Aunt Sally. I got to work on some of the other games there. And then I moved to California in the Silicon Valley Bay Area, where I've been working as a contractor basis on a game called Return of the Guitar Lord.
Oh, really? That sounds cool.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun. It's it's kind of a mix of a visual novel, Candy Crush, rhythm game kind of thing, putting them all together, and it's got a very epic sort of flavor to it, so it's a lot of fun.
Sounds like something I would become instantly addicted to, so we'll have to try this out as soon as it's ready. So what is, I've done programming usually in utility software, which is quite boring. What is it like to program for a video game?
Well, I've done a bit of that too, so I've seen both sides. Working with video games, it's definitely more interesting, I gotta say. It can be a lot of hard work because the deadlines are stricter. There's usually pressure coming from, you know, fans want another release date. That puts pressure on the executives or the producers to put a solid release date on it. Sometimes before we've had a chance to, it depends on who I've been working for, but sometimes it's been before we've had a chance to really flesh out like what it's going to take to make it, which has been a bit stressful. But if you have a good team and you know what you're doing, then it's not a problem if you do your research first.
It seems like with just like anything else, you know, having the right people and having the right setup makes it a lot easier. I know there's a game that was really, you know, spouted to be a Class A great thing, the Falling Sky, something like that.
I don't even know the name.
No Man's Sky, that's right, that's yeah. It. And it came out, and they kind of really missed the mark. So you do have some bummers out there, it sounds like, too. But when you have a hit, you really have a hit. So it's kind of an all or nothing scenario. So how different is it to program a video game versus software for a gaming machine that you would have in a casino?
Well, making a game is a lot of, you have to put a lot of thought and effort into making it fun, right? So that's one of the first things we do is actually just make a first playable build with the very basics down. It's ugly, it's buggy, and the controls are crap, but we just want to make sure that it's fun, because if it's not fun, then, you know, we've wasted our time, right? You don't want to get a really nice polished game that isn't fun. Creating a slot machine game, it's a lot about the visual effects. It's a lot about making it very warm and inviting and exciting. You know, even if you spent $100 and you won $90, you won! Woo!
Right, right.
So there's a lot of that. It's definitely a very different experience.
I can imagine. And it seems like one would be for a much faster play, too. Because a video game, it can be 40, 50 hours really to play from start to finish.
Yeah.
And the casino games are more, you want somebody to be able to sit down, be able to figure it out. I think that would be part of it, right, real quickly. And then, be able to win money at doing it. So.
Yeah, exactly.
So to really geek out on this, what languages do you program in primarily?
So my favorite is C#, because I use Unity a lot.
Okay.
I've used Unity on most of my projects. It's very easy to pick up, but it's also very versatile. It's served us very well in all of the projects we've been a part of. But I have experience in C++, Java, JavaScript, Python, SQL, more that I haven't touched in a long time. So
right. Oh, yeah.
Rusty part of my brain. Everyone has their different expertise and preference. A lot of people like really low-level languages, but I like C# because it's managed. And I get to not worry about it so much.
Plus, it's something that's a standby. You can probably reference a lot of stuff, and there's a lot of material out there.
Oh, yeah.
How many people are on a team to do a game?
That really depends. I mean, if you go to some place like EA where they create AAA titles, you can have very huge teams. I've never worked anywhere like that, but you can have a team as small as two people, or even one person, I guess. One game that comes to mind is it's called World of Goo.
World of Goo, okay.
It's a popular, simple 2D game. I had three people basically working on it the entire time. It could be any size. The size of team I like to work with is about five or six people. You can keep track of things, it's not too complex, and everyone knows each other pretty well.
And it would seem like everybody would have to wear a lot of hats, though, because you're going to have programming, you're going to have graphic design, and playability, and all the different things that would go along with that. So.
Yeah, actually. Working with smaller teams, smaller companies, you get a lot of growing and learning experiences, opportunities to do that. You're not as specialized, and so you can take your hand at simple art to fix things up. You can do some of the audio stuff. you're going to do, yeah, like you said, wearing many hats. So it's a great learning opportunity. Working for a big company, what I understand is you're very specialized, and you do your one thing, like kind of in a similar
right. Type of thing. And actually, you brought this up on the audio stuff too. I know you've done voiceover acting as well, so you're not just a programmer. You've done kind of both sides of the game. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, it's two completely different worlds. I actually got into it kind of by happenstance, but Worky the Chocobo actually was casting something. He got me to audition. He convinced me to audition. Sent it to the director, and he loved it, so I started getting on, started doing voice acting. It's something I always kind of secretly wanted to do, but never really pursued, but it's been amazing. It's been a lot of fun. It's really helped me to explore the creative side of my brain a lot more.
Right.
And to just do stuff that's a lot more impromptu and off the cuff. Type of stuff, rather than like the careful programming side of things.
So if someone wanted to get started in computer programming, they're high school, going on to college, that type of a thing, what would you recommend they do first?
If they just want to get started in computer programming?
Computer gaming programming, that type of thing.
Most people go through school. That seems to be the best route. High school and college, majoring in computer science. Gives you a very solid background. You get a lot of in-depth knowledge about organization, about the low level of machine and high level of programming patterns. But a lot of people don't do that. At 3G Studios, I was working with a man by the name of Matt. And he actually majored in economics, and then he just loved games, and he started playing around with them, modding them, and he just became a good programmer. So he was good. He was very careful about what he wrote, very concerned about making the games fun and about creating scalable, reusable code and things like that. So. But I guess my best advice would be just to study it, and if you can't, then just start playing around with modding your favorite games.
Right. Yeah, that seems like a good place to start. So, all right, so finally, what is the strangest thing you've ever had happen when you've been working on these projects?
That's an interesting question. What is the strangest thing that's happened to you? I guess the strangest thing was right when I was first... getting involved in voice acting, we actually took, I got signed up for an audiobook called Prophecy of the Flame.
Okay.
They were recording it in Idaho. I was living in, like, the southern part of northern Utah at the time.
Right.
So every weekend, we would drive up 8 hours, record our lines for, like, 48 hours and then drive back down. It was pretty intense. I was pretty excited and desperate to get into voice acting,
right.
So I was like totally willing to do it, but at the end of it, it was pretty grueling, and I'll never do it again.
I mean, talk about an intense schedule, my goodness.
Yeah.
So, well, Preston, anything else you'd like to add? Or?
If you're passionate about programming or voice acting or the video game industry in general, just pursue it. Go for it. And don't get discouraged.
Preston, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Well, welcome back, Guy. That was a lot of material to go through today, but a lot of very interesting stuff. And you know, please do send your comments on things. I mean, this is how we get our topics, and this is how we know what to respond to, and you might get a chance to be on the show or even just have us reply back. If you have questions, shoot them out there. We've actually gotten some great guests and some great things out of that, and we really enjoy all of our followers and just being able to have the conversation online and go in a lot more depth about this. We have two more episodes for this block of User Friendly coming up over the space of the next 2 weeks, and then we'll be on a production break for 2 weeks after that and then come back. So during the break, we're actually looking at doing some video podcasts and trying that out on some different things and going into some more depth on some specifics that we've had. We're going to be doing an unboxing video on a Star Wars game that actually looks kind of interesting, and maybe just doing some gameplay online and trying out some of the different things that we've reviewed. We're also building some technology. Part of what we do with our cosplay is we have different aspects of it, and we're going to be doing an exciting little project with that that we're going to be covering on the podcast, and we'll go into a little more depth on that as things get going. So we've got all of that. On next week's show, we're going to have Chaz Wellington, who's going to be talking about the Channels Conference that he just recently attended in Las Vegas. A lot of exciting things that come out of that. I can't wait to see what he's got. We're also going to be putting some pictures up online so you can see what's going on there. Chaz Wellington, who is our host and correspondent from the Las Vegas office. The other person that's going to be on for us next week is Bill Snodgrass. He's going to be going through some more of his material, and we're going to see what he has in store for us. So all of that will be upcoming, as well as what's in the news, what's online, and what's current in technology. Userfriendlyshow.com, One User Friendly on Facebook, One User Friendly on Twitter. Remember, there's other user friendlies, but we're number one, keeping you safe on the cutting edge.